is going to happen. Okay. I'm taking this one too. Okay. Is my mic on? Yeah? Okay. No? Okay. That's Christian for you. Okay. So today, I actually want to talk to you guys about fear. Fear is something that I know a thing or two about. In a couple months, I'm going to be a college graduate, and then I all of a sudden have to be a big girl, and I have to be in the real world. I have been dependent on DCC for 4 years for food, for shelter, and now the last year and a half, a job, okay? When I graduate, I'm going to be jobless and homeless. I am freaking out a little bit. I honestly don't even know how to properly grocery shop for myself. I just go to Walmart, buy a bunch of stuff, and hope it mixes well together, okay? So I know a thing or two about fear, and it's something that I've been dealing with a lot lately as graduation gets closer. So when I took homiletics, I was actually a sophomore, so there's not a whole lot I remembered from it. But I do remember one thing that Ted Smith taught us all throughout the semester. He said to never tell your audience how nervous you are. He said it's bad public speaking skills, and it turns the interested to the uninterested. So naturally, like any good college student, I'm going to tell you guys exactly how nervous I am. From the time I got the invitation to give my senior sermon to now, I actually went through 3 stages of nerves. The first one was anger, okay? I was angry at whoever was on the deciding committee to pick who got a senior sermon. I was angry because now, all of a sudden, I had this huge pressure of making the decision of whether or not I was going to stand up in front of all of you and preach, okay? That wasn't an easy decision. So I was angry, and that's normal. It's not a big deal. I felt like there was a more worthy senior who should be doing this, but I still had to make the decision. Absolutely nothing in me wanted to do this, but at the same time, everything in me wanted to do it. I knew the second that I read that email, I was going to accept it. So I was actually pretty mad that they nominated me. Okay, next, I was paralyzed with fear. As you can tell, I'm shaking. For the next couple weeks after I accepted giving the senior sermon, the idea of preaching would randomly pop in my head, and I couldn't control it. And my heart would just start racing, and my hands would start shaking, and I couldn't get the thought out of my head. I was miserable at what the thought of what I had gotten myself into. So then I picked the date for February, and I just completely stopped thinking about it. I put it to the back of my mind for about 2 months. Well, when January rolled around, I realized, well, I guess it's time to start preparing this. It's about a month away. And that's when my 3rd stage of nerves hit, which was full reliance on God. And I do realize that that should have been first, but it wasn't. So I became fully dependent on God because I did not feel adequate enough to be standing on this stage preaching to all of you guys. Again, I feel like there was a more worthy senior, someone who would do a lot better job than me, someone who probably wouldn't mess up as badly as I might, or somebody who actually wants to be a preacher when they get out of here. So it was a struggle allowing God to tell me that I am worthy of this opportunity, or that even if I do mess up, there's really no better people to mess up in front of than all of you. So I had to give all of my doubts to God, and that was hard for me. Throughout this, I learned that God doesn't necessarily care about the comfortable. I still struggle with being fully dependent on God instead of trying to do everything by myself. It's a struggle, and it's something that I have to remind myself of daily. But I'm not the only one who has had doubts. I'm not the only one who has had fear when given a task by God. In Exodus 3, Moses is working on his father-in-law's farm. He sees a bush burning in the distance, and he goes up to it. God calls to him, and God tells him that he is concerned for the suffering of his people. At that, Moses just kind of stops him right there. God tells him that he is sending him to save the Israelites from slavery. Moses has a load of questions after he hears that. And these are fair questions that any normal person would be asking whenever they hear God giving them this huge task. So the first question is found in Exodus 3. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you. And this will be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain. And Moses said, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they ask, what is his name? What then shall I tell them? And Moses said to God, I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent you. So after God gave Moses that answer, Moses still wasn't exactly satisfied. He still had more questions. So in Exodus 4:1, Moses asks his third question. He asks, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? After Moses asks that, God so faithfully provides Moses with three tasks to show Pharaoh. He turns his staff into a snake. He makes Moses' hand leprous and then takes it away. And then he turns a portion of the Nile into blood when it hits the ground. After seeing these things, Moses still wasn't satisfied, and he still tries to get out of this huge task that God has called him to do. In verse 10, Moses says, pardon your servant, Lord. I have never been eloquent, neither in the past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. I am slow of speech and tongue. And the Lord said, who gave man their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go. I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother, Aaron, the Levite? I know he can speak well. He's already on his way to see you, and he will be glad to see you. So in verse 14, it says that the Lord's anger burned against Moses. But then God still so lovingly provides his brother Aaron as a spokesperson and as a partner in this task. So if we go back up to the top, the first thing that Moses says to God is, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh? Moses had a very interesting life from the day he was born. He was born to an Israelite woman and then hidden for 3 months and then put in a basket to float down the Nile River. You see, the Egyptian king saw that the Israelites outnumbered them, and this worried him. So he put them in a life of slavery. But once they were enslaved, they increased even more. And so then the Israelite king made a law that the midwives would kill the Hebrew male babies and put them in the Nile River after birth. So Moses' mother hid him. But then when she could no longer hide him, she was forced to place him in a basket and float him down the Nile River. And he was found by Pharaoh's daughter. So Moses survived. But then he was forced to live in a life where he had to watch his people be slaves. He had to watch them get beaten day and night and work for the Egyptians. Well, one day he lost it, and he killed an Egyptian for beating an Israelite. Pharaoh wanted to kill him for this. You see, Moses really wasn't too different than us. He lost his temper. So Moses had to run. He ran to Midian, where he met his wife, and he worked on her father's farm for years. You see, out of everyone on the planet, God chose Moses for the specific task. Although he didn't seem to be anyone different, God called him out. See, God doesn't necessarily care about the comfortable. If you haven't experienced that yet, you will. When I received this invitation, my first thought was that there was definitely another senior who should do this. I don't like standing up in front of people, and I most definitely am not a preacher. I understand a little bit of Moses' fear. A huge amount of people were going to be looking to him. The freedom of his people was now in his hands. But God was faithful to Moses every step of the way. Yet Moses still had doubts in his ability to do what God asked him to do. So how many of us have been there? Who has debated with God so much that God was probably burning in anger about you? See, the good thing about Moses was that he eventually did what God asked him to do. But how many of us debate with God just to do the exact opposite of what God is calling us to do? So Moses asks, who am I? When I read that, I feel a little bit of unworthiness. And that's something that I can relate to, and I hope that you guys can relate to too. Who are we that we should go and tell the world about Christ? Who are we that we should stand up and stand out for the least of these? I have this internal battle going on within me saying, who are you to go into full-time ministry? Or who are you to teach the world about a perfect God? Well, God answers this question perfectly to Moses. He says, I will be with you. You see, God never planned to leave Moses alone in doing this task because this was never Moses' task to do. He was a vessel for God. Who am I is also answered in John 15:5. Jesus says, I am the vine and you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing. Apart from God, we can do nothing because it's God who's wanting us to do this task and he wants to do it through us. We are a vessel. So when we choose to put our worth in God, then we find out who we are. God is faithful to those who serve him. And God will give you hard tasks. He has asked every single person in this room to save his people. Moses was a normal person just like we are. He sinned. He had a temper. He had fear. It's okay to ask God, who am I that I should be doing this? But we have to listen to God and we have to realize that we are a vessel for him to work through. So here's a video for you guys to watch. Found in him. Then we can realize it's how we allow God to use us that matters. So another one of Moses' fears is found in Exodus 4:1. I feel like this is a fear that a lot of us in this room might actually have. And I'm not sure if this fear ever goes away. Moses asks, what if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, the Lord did not appear to you? This is definitely a scary thought. What if no one listens to me? What if no one believes me? That is something that has stopped people from sharing the gospel all the time. But God doesn't care about the comfortable. God doesn't focus on the what ifs like we do. Moses actually had a lot to worry about. What if Pharaoh doesn't listen? What if the Egyptians kill me? What if I fail? If we look at the beginning of Exodus, we might see why Moses has this fear. In Exodus 2, Moses kills an Egyptian. He thinks that he's defending the Israelites and helping them. In Acts 7:23, we see Paul records a speech given by Stephen. It says, when Moses was 40 years old, he decided to visit his own people, the Israelites. He saw one of them being mistreated by an Egyptian. So he went to his defense and avenged him by killing the Egyptian. Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them, but they did not. The next day, Moses came upon two Israelites who were fighting. He tried to reconcile them by saying, men, you are brothers. Why do you want to hurt each other? But the man who was mistreating the other pushed Moses aside and said, who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday? See, Moses meant to do good. His people didn't notice that, and they didn't listen to him. At that time, they didn't view him as a hero, so why would they now? What would change the last time to this time? What if there's something I really don't focus on? Either I don't worry enough to care, or I just don't want to stress. So when I went to Africa, I didn't really have all of my details in a line. I knew that I was going to Burkina Faso, that I was going to be homeschooling the missionaries' kids, and that we would be living on a farm with no electricity and no running water. I thought I was set. I was ready for an adventure, and I really didn't want to know any more details. Well, soon, like after I met in front of a missions committee asking for money, and they asked me a million questions I didn't have the answer to, I realized that there was a lot of stuff I needed to know before going to a country like Africa. So here's a little list. One, you should always know what religion you're going into, okay? We were going into a Muslim community, and if you know anything about Muslims, they don't like the left hand. I'm left-handed, so if I went up to them and like tried to shake their hand or like eat in front of them, I would have been incredibly disgraceful. Two, you should probably know what diseases there are, because it is always good to know what you could possibly die from. Three, you should know where and how easily accessible a doctor is, because ours was about 4 hours away, so if something happened, I would have been dead. Four, you need to know how to dress. Because if I walked around Africa in shorts, I would have been known as a prostitute. Five, you need to know if communication is possible and how often you'll be able to communicate. The first month we were there, if we wanted to check an email, we had to sit in the middle of a cornfield in one specific spot, and it would take 1 to 2 hours to read, reply, and like hopefully it would send to an email. You got lucky if it would send. So lastly, you need to know where in the world you are going, because I didn't until I was already there. What if questions need to be asked when you're going to a country like Africa? I should have been asking questions like, what if we get evacuated from the country? Or what if I get malaria? What happens then? Those are scary thoughts, and I didn't worry about any of it. Smart people ask what if. It's okay to have that fear. So what if people don't listen? A lot of us want to go into full-time ministry or be teachers or be therapists. So what if you have a classroom full of kids who won't listen to you? Are you going to just let them run wild and do whatever they want for an hour and a half, or are you going to try to get control of them? Or what if you're counseling somebody and you see what needs to change, but they won't take your advice, they won't listen to you? You're going to get frustrated and maybe disappointed, but are you going to give up on them? Or what if you're trying to show someone the love of Jesus or the freedom found in God and they won't listen? Are you going to just stop? Some people won't listen. But if Moses had stopped, think about how different things would have been. He led an entire people group out of slavery. Out of misery, he led those people. So what if you don't share the gospel with someone because you're afraid they won't listen? Instead, I want you all to be afraid of missing an opportunity to share the gospel. We are vessels for the Holy Spirit to work through. He is the vine, and we have to be the branches. They might not listen, but we can't let that stop us from reaching out. So Moses was very uncomfortable. He pleaded with God, trying to get out of this assignment. He tried to have God send someone else. I actually think that Moses might have gone through 3 stages of nerves. I think he was angry that God chose him for this huge task. And then I think he was paralyzed with fear, thinking, what if no one listens to me? Or what if I fail? But in the end, Moses fully relied on God, and he was completely successful in what God wanted him to do. So it's okay to be uncomfortable, and it's okay to be scared, because God knows exactly what he is doing when he calls you. Let's pray. God, I thank you for giving us the uncomfortable situation.